is Tennessee Talks with United States Congressman Tim Burchett.
Hey, folks, I'm Congressman Tim Burchett, and welcome back to another episode of Tennessee Talks. I've been told by numerous critics that I need to quit looking at my papers and look at the camera, so I'm going to try to focus more on y'all. But today I'm joined by my friend Chief Paul Noel, and he's our Knoxville Police Chief, or KPD as I like to call him, being an old Knoxville City boy. I've always had a fondness for KPD. They've always been stand-up folks, and I've enjoyed my relationship with them as a young man. And of course, my daddy, y'all know, was about law and order, and so I have that deep respect for law and order. But I still get nervous though when a chief or a principal of a school walks in. I always think I'm in trouble. So, but I knew that I'd called you, so we're all right. And you came to Knoxville after 25 years with the New Orleans Police Department, or Nolens, as some of my buddies in Congress say. We got a couple of them that are Cajun. I have to get a couple of them to slow down. I say, hey, man, slow down for a minute. Let me see if I can understand that. And I, you know, because I always say East Tennessee is the only place in America where people don't speak with an accent. And my northern friends and some of my Cajun friends get a kick out of that. But before you came to Knoxville, you served as Deputy Superintendent, Chief Detectives, Chief of Field Operations, Leader of the Sexual Assault Special Task Force, Commander of the Criminal Investigative Division, and many other things. He came to the job in June of 2022, and we're glad to have you here, Chief. Thank you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Obligatory fist bump there. It's not in my notes, but as I read the part about Leader of the Sexual Assault Special Task Force, you know, when I was in the state legislature, I sponsored legislation when we got the ICAC teams. I mean, we got $5 million for that across the state of Tennessee, and that was a huge deal. And I was the lead sponsor of that in the Senate. And I dealt with a lot of the officers across the state. And what I found out was the incredible amount of burnout, because they, you know, these men and women, they're family people, and they're, you know, you go in there and some poor lady or child or whatever has been abused sexually or some other way, and it does take a toll. Do you see that leads to burnout, or are you able to, I mean, you got to have some help there. You got to have somebody talking to them, other cops that have been through it or what have you. And I'm sure there's professional people that do that stuff too that y'all bring on. But is that a real problem with the burnout on that?
It's a real challenge. So, you know, better part of my career, I worked in investigating sexual assault of adults and children, child abuse, and adult domestic violence. And I can tell you, it really does wear on you. As an investigator, those investigators are truly doing God's work, and it's incredibly challenging. And, you know, here in Knoxville, the internet crimes against children for the entire state of Tennessee is based right out of KPD. Very, yep. Very proud of that. And they're doing work all across the state and all across the region and all across the country to get sexual predators off the street.
You know, it was amazing when we did that, Chief. We came up with this idea that we would bring the all the senators into a room, and the ICAC guy came in and he showed us the screen across the state of Tennessee, all 95 counties, and they were showing the activity that was going on of these predators, or dirt bags as I call them. It's a family show, won't give all the adjectives, but, and it went across all the states, and it had these, the number in these counties. And I remember Charlotte Burks, my dear friend, and she and I came to the Senate together. Her husband had gotten shot. He was a state senator, and he got shot and killed. But anyway, she asked, pull up my county. She had a bunch of those little small counties. And at that time, there was five or six predators that were reaching out to children in that little small county. I mean, in the big, you know, Knox County, Davidson County, Shelby County, it was, you know, double digits, but it was three or four. And I remember she just said, she was just like, you know, just, and the light went on in the whole room. And I leaned over to somebody and said, I'm getting the funding for this dadgum thing. And that was, that was years ago. I don't know if $5 million would even touch it now, but that's how we got it started. And it really just, I was kind of proud that I was able to get that going. And I'm glad, and I'm also proud of the fact that Knoxville's kind of leading the way with all that. So that's really cool. Back in the day, I would go by and we would buy pizzas for everybody, and I never wanted to see what they were having to view because I'm sure it would have disturbed me. And now I'm a dad, and I know it would just I stay awake at night thinking about stuff like that. It just the heinous people that that are out there. Just no lack of a better word. Now, anyway, you don't need to comment on it, but I was glad the state of Tennessee passed the death penalty for some of those folks, because I did when I was in the state senate. And it got thrown out as unconstitutional, which a lot of my stuff, when I would go to the extreme. But now people are seeing it, and I'm glad we're catching on. Anyway, get on to some other stuff. How'd you end up becoming a police officer? Is it in your blood? What'd your mom and dad do?
So it's in the family. So, you know, I grew up in blue collar New Orleans my whole life. Everybody, you know, worked either in a priest, a firefighter, or a police officer. Or you worked at a chemical factory.
That's good Catholic family, I say.
So Catholic, I went to Catholic all boys school all the way through college. So I was educated by brothers and priests. I was coached by brothers and priests. And when we got out of line, the brothers weren't afraid to put you up against the wall. And my dad wasn't on the job, but I go back three generations of family members in the New Orleans Police Department.
Wow.
And I remember watching the NOPD cops work Mardi Gras as a young kid, and they had the billy clubs. They were rosewoods. And they had a leather strap on them, and they would twirl them, and they had a metal tap on the bottom.
Wow.
And they would walk down a parade route and twirl those sticks. And I thought that was the coolest job in the world.
And it is.
And it is.
It is.
Yep. I've had a blessed career. It's the best decision I've ever made.
Well, that's cool. What are some of the biggest challenges you feel like facing police officers today? I get disgusted with the people that say ugly things about law enforcement. I always stop and talk to all the officers in D.C., the Capitol Police, and they're friends of mine. They holler at me a couple of times because I'm a motorcycle guy, and some of those guys that ride the big Harleys that are on the Metropolitan D.C. Police Force. And, you know, and I see the morale is just in the pits because you're outside and it's hot and somebody's – and, you know, in D.C. it's just – if somebody's threatening you or cursing you or – yelling something off the wall ugly at you, and then they just got to sit there and take it. I can go in there conditioned comfort, and sure. They got to stand out there and just take it. So do you see a lot of that as the burnout, or what's the biggest trouble?
So I'm going to qualify my answer with one thing. So this is a challenging job because it's coming more and more complex.
Yep.
You know, we're the last entity that really still makes house calls. We deal with a lot of mental illness, homelessness, all these other problems that police are not really equipped to deal with. And so I think that's really a challenge for police officers. And you see it in some of the big cities where the people really don't respect the police. But I can tell you, my experience in Knoxville, people love the police here. People absolutely love the police. I go up to Louis's in North Knoxville, they have lunch a lot. And a lot of times people don't even know I'm the chief.
I hope my wife doesn't say this. She'll be saying, honey, you haven't taken me to Louis. And, you know, we can try to hit it about once a week. So
it's a great place. But people love it. They don't even know I'm the chief. They just think I'm a police officer. And they'll stop. And they're so respectful, so appreciative. People love the police here. But, people who are thinking about becoming police officers want to play for a winning team. And across the country, law enforcement is not seen as a winning team as it used to be.
Yeah. That's I think that's societal.
Yes.
And that's on us. That's on parents, and whether there's no parents. People are always critical of me when I say this, and I say that they say we need better parental skills, like government needs. I say, no, we just need parents. I mean, parents in the home, your dad, your mom, they're going to mess up.
Yes.
But dadgum, they're there. And that's half the battle, I think, of just showing up. But I know at recruitment's got to be tough, the money and just getting them to stay. How are y'all working on that right now? And what do you think is the ultimate reason that we can't recruit better?
So I think it's several things. You know, one, you know, right now there's a lot of opportunity for people to go make money working from home and other things. It's a tough job. We work shift work. We work nights. We work weekends. It's hot out there. right? We're out there working in the heat in some really tough environment. It's, you know, you need to be physically fit. You know, this is a challenging job. But I think also that I think we need to work hard to make this job seem attractive again. So what we're trying to do in Knoxville is not only we're advertising across the country and trying to bring people in, but we're really investing in our employees and creating professional developments and career paths. One of the great things about policing is you can change jobs without changing jobs. So at NOPD, I was a patrol officer. I was a homicide detective. I investigated sexual assault.
You can move up.
You can move up in different jobs. I worked on the chief staff. I was a supervisor. I supervised the detectives. So there's a lot of different opportunities that you could go. You could go do SWAT if you want to do SWAT. You could go work with kids in schools. So I think what we need to do a better job of is selling this job as a community service and giving back to your community.
That's a good selling point. You know, when I was a kid, the TV shows Rookie, mm-hmm. Rookies, and there was and SWAT was
yes.
one of them, and I can still remember that song in my head, or it wasn't a song, it was just the beat.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and it was Hollywood promoted
yes.
it, and now you know, Hollywood shows a couple of guys in a Porsche driving down the road,
yeah.
you know, going to make a big drug bust, mm-hmm. and that's just not the case. They used to say that that domestic disputes were some of the toughest things, and that you're more likely to an officer's more likely to. Endure an injury in that. Is that still a true statement?
It's the most dangerous call we go on. We just had two officers recently were involved in an officer involved shooting. They went on a domestic violence call.
Yep.
And actually right in front of them, the perpetrator shot the victim right in the head, and our officers did a brilliant job. And they were able to take the suspect out before he was able to hurt them, save the woman's life. You know, she's going to have a long road to recovery.
Right.
But they're very,
those
very,
two officers got to go home to their families, and that other person survived.
They did. And when you look at what the work that they did, you know, it shows the professionalism and the training of the men and women of Knoxville Police Department. I'm so proud to watch them work.
I am too. You know, I told my daughter this when. I told her this when she was a little girl before I even adopted her, and every time I'd hear a siren, I'd say, no matter what it was, an ambulance, a fire truck, or a police officer, I'd say, baby, say a prayer. And she says, why, Tim? I said, because one of our buddies is getting ready to go into a bad situation.
Yes.
And it's just always, you know, the rest of us run out while you guys are running in, and I dig that, because the more I see, you know, the ladder I'm on or whatever, and around the people I am, it is not... A lot of the times, it's not a, you know, it's not a courtesy call.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that, and they are there to take care of business, and they have to. What are some of the ways that folks in the community can help reduce crime? I always get mad at people. Say, well, why didn't you call it in? Because something was going on. Well, I didn't want to buy. I said, hell, that's why you pay taxes, man.
Yes.
Call it in and do it. But anyway, I'm sorry. I'm answering my own questions. But go ahead, Chief.
Well, you're actually right on. You just gave the answer. What I tell everyone is get to know your neighbors. Know who your neighbors are. If you don't know who your neighbors are next door and across the street and behind you, then you really should go out and get to know them, because that really helps us reduce crime. Because when you see something going on that's unusual, then pick up the phone and call your neighbor, or give us a call, and we'll come out there and check it out. So if you see anything, and also if you see someone you think that needs help, one of my neighbors, I live in West Hills, was riding down the street, and he called me up, and he saw a lady that looked like she was in a little distress, and she was having a heat stroke.
Right.
And he called, he helped her. If he would not have stopped, I really believe that it would not have ended well.
Yeah, heat stroke's nothing to mess with,
absolutely.
Especially this time of year. I grew up on the tough streets of West Hills, so that was the best. It was surreal. I mean, it was surreal. You knew your neighbors,
yes.
and if you weren't at somebody's house, you were at yours, and you know your parents yes. could find you. And it was just it was great. I went to West Hills Elementary School. As I like to tell my daughter, I rode my bicycle uphill 5 miles both ways.
Both ways.
Both ways. Fought the Cro-Magnon man that lived down on the corner too. Every morning I'd have to go by him. How can the federal government best help your efforts? And I know staying out of your business. I always get ticked off, though. I was county mayor before I was in Congress, but these unfunded mandates, they say, oh, we're going to give this money and we're going to pay cops more. It's still okay to say cops, isn't it? Cops is not a negative.
I say cops every day.
All right. You pay cops more, but it's like a one-year program, and you check into it, and then you do, and then you hire all these people, and then the money's not there the next year, and then it's an unfunded mandate. You got to raise property tax, and you got to go. You got to either cut a program out or lay people off and reduce the safety of the community.
So a couple things. So first, stay out of my business with these complex consent decrees.
Right.
Let local government fix local problems. But also, you know, there's agencies like the Bureau of Justice Assistance. You know, we were just selected. Knoxville was just selected as one of five cities as a public safety partnership site, where the federal government gives us a lot of technical assistance to get better, to lock bad guys up and get the most violent criminals off the street. That's the help we need with crime analysis and to be able to better track firearms that are used in violent crimes. That's the type of technical assistance that we need. Support from the Federal Bureau of Investigations and the ATF. We have a great relationship with those entities. But stay out of our business, but also give us that technical assistance to get better.
What I wish we'd do is just ask your all's opinion and don't make it a one-size-fits-all. I filed some legislation, it's a little crazy, that just did away with, basically just did away with all these crazy Washington credentials that they force on you and just say, send you the money and let you decide within parameters. I mean, you're not going to go out and buy a new Trans Am or anything, but you know what I mean. It's the fact that you all know better than what's Washington. And what works in Los Angeles, California, might not be the best policy in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Not at all. And, you know, we get a lot of federal grants, and we're taking advantage of that money. We're locking a lot of bad guys up here, a lot of really violent offenders, gang members coming down from Detroit and other places, coming down to prey upon us. We're locking those fellas up, and with the help of those grants really does help.
Good. Bust their ass. Pardon my language. You came from New Orleans. We'll change the subject a little bit here since we're about to wrap up. What's your favorite Cajun food, if you're home? I know here it's probably not anything near what you get, but what is it?
So my wife is a French chef, so I'm in good shape. You need to come over to eat. But so we eat red beans and rice every Monday. That's a New Orleans tradition. Red beans and rice. With andouille sausage or pork chop, maybe fried chicken. And for breakfast on the weekends, I like to do boudin, which is a sausage, rice-based sausage, boudin and biscuits. And for dinner, my favorite food would be either a redfish or an alligator coubillon, which is like a spicy tomato soup with poached redfish or alligator.
Well, I had, growing up in East Tennessee, we call them crawdads, I guess, crayfish. And a buddy of mine has this crawfish boil, and it's like regional. I mean, people kind of say, what is that? And they say, I don't know. They just camp out in this field, literally, to get this food. And I never ate it. And dadgummit, Steve Scalise had a thing in D.C., and I was eating this, and I thought it was a shrimp gumbo, and I was like, man, this is really good shrimp. And he goes, that's Burchett, that's not shrimp. That's got crawdads. I go, what? And I thought, oh, no. I'd been going to my buddy's crawfish bowl for years, and I never would eat them. And I guess I sort of had a, you know, it's kind of a professional courtesy. You figure crawdad's going to bite you no matter what. It's kind of like politicians. And I would never eat it. And I'll see you, baby. She's going to go hang out, and I'm going to go eat crawdads the whole night. So, man, but anyway, y'all got some great food. This is the part of the program that I dislike the most, and my guests always like it. And I let y'all ask me a question, anything you want. Of course, we can edit it out if you say something really bad about me, but ask me anything you want, Chief.
So I got a question for you. So I've met a lot of congressmen and senators, met Scalise from New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Great guy. You seem different than everybody else. So my question to you is, what is a simple East Tennessee boy? How do you fit into that environment up there?
I don't. You're right. I'm a little different. My banker called me one morning and said, you know, you are the brokest congressman there is in Tennessee. And then he says, let me correct that. I think he said the poorest. You're the poorest congressman in the country. And I said, well, I'll take that. He said, well, but see, you're honest. You know, that's mom and daddy, they were Depression era people from Cheatham. Mama's from Cheatham County. Didn't have electricity. Was a senior in high school. Lost her oldest brother in the Second World War. My daddy was off in the Pacific in the Marine Corps fighting the Japanese. And matter of fact, that 48 star flag on the wall right there was on my uncle's casket.
Wow.
And that picture up there is a picture of my dad on Okinawa when he was 1st Marine Division. His colonel on Peleliu was a guy named Chesty Puller. And they're just hardworking people, man. I mean, they did what's right. And my daddy told me, he told me this story. He said, "You know what I do at night, buddy?" And I said, "What's that, Daddy?" He said, "I sleep." He didn't worry about what he did. And he took a lot of big, he did some great things. He named a, we're Republicans, we're conservative, just not angry about it. But he was in the school board and he named a school after a lady named Sarah Moore Green. It was a black lady on the school board with Daddy. It was in the 70s. And I can remember Big Shots talking to Daddy about it. And he said, "Charlie," he said, "you want to name this school after a woman?" Which, 1972, that's still kind of edgy. And he goes, "A black woman." And he said, "Yeah, a living black woman." And Dad said, "Well," he said, "I could do something about one of those, but I'd probably go to the penitentiary, And he said, and he ended up doing it. And he stuck by his guns. He always did what was right. And Mama did what was right. And they were exceptional people. And they had there's 500 or 600 people at both of their funerals. And, I was the baby of the family. My brother and sister were great athletes, good looking and smart, and I was none of that. I was all the opposites of all that. And I guess I'm the black sheep of the family. I'm the one they have to say, "Yeah, my brother's a congressman." They have to kind of whisper that. But no, I just had great folks, man. And they were hardworking, conservative, good folks. And I just got fortunate. So I hit the lottery. And I married beautiful woman, and she had a little girl, and now I have a family, and I am that completes everything. The politics, that's not my dream. The family was my dream, and I got that. So I get to come home to that every weekend, and every night when I'm in town. So that's pretty cool. So that kind of keeps me on the up and up. But it's everything I got is because my parents. Because I was it took me 6 years to get out of UT, and I didn't drink or smoke pot. And I mean, and my brother and sister, 4 years, scholarships, all the good stuff, and I wasn't. But I just got lucky. I was in the right place at the right time, and God. Every morning I always pray, "Lord, please save our country," and so. I hope I'm part of the thing that's helping do that. So I don't know what your question was, but I answered a lot of things there. I guess I ought to send you $300 for counseling. That was a good counseling session.
That was a great answer.
Chief. Yeah. Anyway, we appreciate you coming here, Chief. I appreciate what you do to keep us safe. And you've been good to me and my girls, I'll tell you that. And you're great for the community. And it's sort of like when I'm in church with a missionary from over in Africa or something, usually for about the first 30 minutes, I can't understand what they're saying. The last 15, I catch on, and I caught on to your accent really quick.
So that's good. I got that strong East Tennessee accent.
Yeah, you really got it going on there, and we appreciate that. But anyway, thank you for what you do for Knoxville, and thank you, everyone, for joining with this episode. Remember to follow me on Rumble, that's our new deal, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm Congressman Tim Burchett, and thank you all for sending me here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Tennessee Talks. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Keep up with Congressman Burchett by following Rep. Tim Burchett on Twitter and Instagram, and Congressman Tim Burchett on Facebook and YouTube.